Chapter 94. Tell her. You have to tell her. Gavin rolled the little brown ball of opium between his finger and thumb. Caris was still asleep, and the people were scurrying every which way in the hall outside, preparing for war. When the messenger had come to him at Kip's testing, Gavin had at first refused to understand the man's words, then nearly panicked. That Caris had been beaten had affected him far more than he would have expected.
"Look to what you love," his father had said.
They'd sail at high tide tomorrow. The mobilization was unbelievably fast because everyone had known that when the permission came, they would have to move fast. What was transpiring now was simply the last-minute orders. Still, there were 1,000 decisions to be made, and though Gavin wasn't technically part of them, he still knew more than anyone here how to successfully put together an armada and an army. But for now, he sat at Caris's bedside. When he'd first seen her caked with blood, he'd thought she would be crippled by her injuries. Then, after the chirurgeons had tended to her and reported, he thought it was a miracle she wasn't hurt worse. Now he realized she'd been beaten expertly, and exactly how much whoever did it had intended. She'd been meant to look awful, without incapacitating her permanently. It had been intended as a warning to Gavin, not a declaration of war. His father had no idea. He didn't have any proof it had been his father, of course. There were any number of possible suspects, but with this timing, this care, this precision, Gavin didn't need proof. Seeing her on the bed, wrapped in bandages, unconscious, Gavin was made aware of how small she was. When she was awake, talking, her personality was so big you forgot. But here she looked so vulnerable, a delicate flower, bruised. "I'm going to rip their damn arms off. I swear it," Gavin said quietly.
"You talking to yourself, or am I that bad of a faker?" Caris asked, cracking one eye.
The other opened a bare slit through the swollen blackness. "You're back," Gavin said. His relief was like a crushing weight lifting.
"Did I say something?"
She trailed off. "Something embarrassing while you were mudged on Poppy? Like about seeing me naked?" "No." She closed her eyes.
"You're lucky it hurts to move, or I'd beat you bloody, Gavin Gyle."
"Dazen," Gavin said quietly. That one word was the whole reason he'd come here. The whole reason he'd waited until Caris was lucid, but after all the build-up, he was still surprised to hear the word. A bruised and swollen face and 2 black eyes and a split lip were not the easiest canvas on which to read emotions, and Gavin saw nothing. Caris's eyes were closed, like she hadn't heard him. Maybe she hadn't. Maybe she'd passed out again. A solitary tear leaked from the corner of one closed eye and tracked down her cheek. The door's open. Nothing for it but to charge through now. Gavin said, "Corvin Danavis and I came up with a plan a month before the Battle of Sundered Rock. We'd made so many bargains with so many devils that even though I thought my original cause was just, I knew a victory would be disastrous for the 7 satrapies. Corvin gave me a scar to match Gavin's, and a spy gave us the details of his battle dress." Gavin heaved a breath. "My mother knew it was me instantly, of course, but she didn't want to lose her last son, so she coached me how to be Gavin. I thought if I could keep my disguise for even a few months, that I would be able to stop most of the damage to the 7 satrapies. I didn't realize how hard it would be with you. I didn't know how to even talk with you. I thought you loved Gavin. Marrying you as him? It was one betrayal too many, Caris. I couldn't. I just couldn't. But maybe what I did was worse." The broken betrothal hadn't turned out so well. She'd disappeared, humiliated, financially ruined, and he'd thought he would never see her again. Part of him had been glad, the part that wanted to live. Surely Caris would be the one to see through his masquerade. The year she'd been gone had given him time to solidify his mask, to become Gavin Gyle.
"Tell me," she said.
She wouldn't look him in the eye, and she made no motion to clear away her tears.
"Tell me everything."
Her tone gave him nothing. It was cold, flat, lifeless. She already knew enough to get him killed, so he didn't know why it should be hard. In for a den, in for a dinar, right? But the sick feeling in the pit of his stomach wasn't about life and death. Somehow those were paltry things. This was about disgusting a woman who meant more to him than anything he'd ever known. He drew a deep breath, leaned back in his chair, leaned forward. 7 years. 7 impossible goals. He'd failed at this goal every year for the past 16. If she killed him for this, at least he would have done something right. So he talked. He told her about the fire at her family's house, how he'd found he could split light that night, and how he'd been wild with rage, thinking she'd betrayed him. He told of fleeing in shame, of being pursued, of having an army coalesce around him he wasn't even sure he wanted to have, and then of Gavin rebuffing his offers to surrender. He told her how he'd finally started fighting with his whole heart, of putting Corvin Danavis in charge of his armies, of fighting across the length of Atash, of promises from several Parian clans, of how they'd needed those Parian reinforcements so badly they'd fled to meet them all the way into Tyria, where they finally found out they'd been betrayed. The Parian clans weren't coming. He said little about the final battle. He'd killed a lot of men that day, some of them brothers and sisters, sons and daughters of men and women he'd come to admire since. Then he talked about the years since, how he'd faced the challenges of learning to be Gavin, and how he'd tried to right the wrongs that so few of the other members of the Spectrum cared to try to redress. He spoke for more than an hour, and as he spoke, he could feel her softening, warming toward him, her expression opening. And finally, he'd reached the Battle of Garriston and its aftermath, and how she'd slapped him and said she knew his secret, and how he was afraid she'd know the full truth. Quietly, he shared how he had to decide whether he should tell her the truth or kill her. Any warmth that had been gathering was dissipated like he'd thrown his windows open in winter. He saw the muscle in her jaw twitch. "You were going to kill me, you asshole," it said. "You wanted the truth," Gavin said. "Telling you means you could kill me."
"It makes sense, you bastard. Just don't expect it to warm the cockles of my heart."
He had nothing to say. He realized he'd ground the little brown grain of opium to dust between his fingers. "I am who I am, Karis," he said. Then he realized how ridiculous saying that was right now. "I mean, I am the prism, so..."
"I know what you meant. So, is that it?"
He hesitated. "No, that's not it, Karis. I killed Gavin last night."
"You mean metaphorically?"
she asked. So he told her. Then he backed up and told her about Anna, and he told her the truth.
"But the Blackguards, they say she jumped."
"They lied to save me, Karis. I didn't ask them to, I swear. Anna said some pretty foul things about you, and I knew I'd lost you forever. I threw her out onto my balcony. I don't think I was trying to murder her, but she hit the railing and tumbled right over. I went to the roof to try to balance. I can't anymore. So I went down to let Gavin out, to let him kill me." He couldn't look at her. Even with her battered face, he could read horror easily enough. Finally, after telling her about Gavin, he said, "I didn't know what he did to you back then, how he humbled you. I should have figured it out, but I've been so worried about myself that I couldn't see even the most obvious things about those around me. I'm sorry, Karis, and I know I haven't acted like it, but I love you, and I want to spend the rest of my life with you, if you can ever forgive me." The silence was deep enough to drown in.
"Infuriating. Incorrigible. Inelegant. Inefficient. Incredible in both senses, but not, in the end, insincere. Are you, Dazen Guile?"
"Huh?"
"Kiss me,"
Karis said. "Pardon?"
"It wasn't a request."
He stood up from his chair and sat on the edge of her bed. She grunted with pain as his movement jostled her. "Sorry," he mumbled. "Maybe
not a request.
But your lips are cracked and..."
"Not a request."
"Ah." He kissed her with the gentleness of a man kissing an invalid. She pulled back, peering at him through swollenness-slitted eyes, disapproving.
"That was horrible, Dazen Guile. That was not the kiss I've been waiting 16 years for."
"Second chance?" he asked. She looked unconvinced.
"You don't deserve it."
"I don't," he said seriously.
"You don't," she said gravely. But then, if you and I aren't about second chances, I don't know who is.
She grinned a bit, though. He kissed her again, tenderly, but drawing her in. But what began as a gift for her benefit, a smooth, strong seduction, soon morphed. He folded her small form into his, wrapping protective arms around her. As they kissed, he could feel a tension loosening in him, a tension that had been knotted for so long he'd come to think of that pain as part of the pain of being alive. She pulled back, and instantly back on guard, fearing rejection, Gavin pulled back too. But Caris murmured,
"I'm afraid you've left me breathless, Lord Guile."
"Well, thank you," relief beneath his grin.
"Because I can't breathe through my nose right now."
She laughed, and he joined her ruefully. "You are so beautiful," he said. He felt as if his heart had swollen too large for his chest. A dubious look.
"I might be part blind right now, but you shouldn't be. I got beat up. What's your excuse?"
He chuckled. "I didn't mean particularly, precisely at this moment. You know what? I think my lips can make a more convincing case without words. Come back here." They kissed. And kissed. And chuckled together about Caris needing to take little breaths, and Gavin misreading her little moans of desire and her little moans of pain when he got too passionate. The world ceased. No worries, no cares. That knot Gavin hadn't known he carried eased and opened and disappeared, and he felt suddenly stronger than he had been in his entire life. Free. The power of the secret broken. Chains shattered.
"Orholam, have mercy, how I want to make love with you," she said.
"I can be persuaded," Gavin said quickly. She made a little sound of frustration.
"If only my body was so amenable."
"I could be gentle," he offered, giving a roguish grin. She pulled him close and whispered in his ear.
"After 16 years of missing you, Dazen Guile, the last thing I want from you is gentle."
He swallowed. Speechless. "Will you marry me, Caris Whiteoak?" Damn, he could have done better than that. Such questions should have some eloquence. Then again, with his history with Caris, perhaps a simple truth was better than an artful one. "Caris, why are you crying?"
"Because it's past time for my pain medicine, you big idiot."
There was a knock on Gavin's door. "Oh, you have got to be joking," Gavin said, looking at the door like he could kill it with his eyes. He turned back to her. "Does that mean yes?"
"You've worn me down and taken advantage of my incapacitated state, so—"
"So that means yes?" Another knock on the door.
"You stupid, stupid man, of course it does."
"I love you, Caris Whiteoak," she smiled mischievously.
"You ought to."
The door opened and a blackguard wheeled the white in. Gavin couldn't keep the huge grin off his face.
"Oh dear. Have I interrupted something?"
the white asked. "No," Gavin said. At the same time, Caris said,
"Yes." "I see."
"You were just the person I was hoping to see," Gavin said. "Hi, Mistress White. Would you be so good as to marry us?" The white inclined her head, looking over the corrective spectacles she was wearing.
"Well, Gavin Guile, it certainly took you long enough. And Caris Whiteoak, slowest seduction in history. A woman with your charms,"
the white sniffed. "Is that a yes?" Gavin asked.
"Of course it is," Caris answered for her.
She was grinning from ear to ear.
"I imagine that Gavin's heading straight off to war, and that you'll want this done as soon as he gets back,"
the white said. "No," Gavin said, "right now."
"Right now?" Caris said. "Don't you want to give this some thought? We have no idea what we're getting into."
"And when will we? Some things you can't know until you're in them. I'll be in it with you. That's more than enough for me." Gavin turned to the white. "Right now." The white grumbled.
"Figures," but she smiled. "Gavin, you're willing to have your father disown you over this?"
"I'm feeling invincible right now," Gavin said.
"How do you know about that, Aurea?"
"Disowned?"
Caris asked.
"I'll explain. Later," Gavin said.
"Me too," the white said. "Caris, you know what this may mean for your tenure?"
"Yes,"
Caris said.
"Rules are made to bend for the right people," Gavin said.
"Promise me a big wedding when you get back,"
Caris said.
Huge.
And so they were wed. The vows were simple. In the discharge of his normal duties as prism, Gavin had prompted brides and grooms through the vows himself, but today he forgot them. And as soon as they were out of his mouth, they became a blur. He was barely aware even of the white. He had eyes only for Caris. He was filled with an inexplicable tenderness for this wild, frustrating, beautiful, stubborn, amazing woman. He kissed Caris again, and she grimaced under her smile. "Time for more medicine?" he asked. She nodded, apologetic. He found the tincture and poured her a dose. She accepted it gratefully and lay back on her pillows.
"Come back to me, my lord. Come back soon. You hear me?"
"Yes, my lady," he said. He couldn't stop grinning. She was asleep in less than a minute. Finally, Gavin turned to the white.
"Well done, Lord Prism," she said. "Perhaps I was right about you after all."
"I do my best."
"I hope your best is enough to save us."
And with the quiet moment, he remembered why he had worked so hard not to have quiet moments with the white. She would ask that they go to the roof, and that he balance. She had all sorts of reasons. She would have heard all the stories that Mauricia had told him. She would know what they meant.
"Do you know," she said, "I was on the roof the other day, and do you know what I saw? Cranes. Thousands of them. Migrating. Have you ever seen them?"
"Not that I remember."
"They fly in V's. Something about it makes it easier."
It was an odd thing to say, like you'd explain to a child. Gavin had, of course, seen migrating birds before.
"This year, they weren't flying in a V. They were flying in a single line. Thousands of them. So odd. Cranes never fly over water for long when they migrate. I could see they were struggling. Without the efficiencies of their normal formation, birds were dropping out, falling, dying. They flew straight toward me. And then, suddenly, as they reached Little Jasper, that odd line broke apart. The cranes rested that day on the Jaspers, as they have not for many years. And when they left, they flew normally."
She didn't really finish her story, she simply stopped talking.
"Regardless, they were saved."
He'd broken the bane and saved some cranes. Or Holum's nipple. "That's marvellous," Gavin said.
"Have you had a chance to go up to the roof yet?" she asked.
"Yes, yes, I have." Face bland. She studied him. Did she buy it? Surely this was her telling him she knew. Unless it was the ramblings of an old woman. Maybe senility came like this on a woman as bright as Aurea. Maybe she had the pieces, and some part of her was desperately trying to put it all together by talking it out loud. Or she was warning him because of their friendship. Their friendship? Were they friends, after all? But she was utterly dedicated to the Chromeria, to her duties, to the seven satrapies. Her next words, he knew her next words were going to be, "Gavin, we need to talk about how to ease you into retirement."
"Gavin," she said, "the generals are in my room planning the invasion. I think they could use your expertise."
Gavin took a deep breath. That meant his father would be there. Frying pan, fire. He stood, bent over to kiss Caris's forehead, and popped his neck right and left. "Very well, Aurea. Let's save the world."